Good morning. Good morning. It is, we do have a quorum. Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, November 19th, 2019, and the time is 9:05. I now call this meeting of the Dallas City Council to order. We will begin with our invocation, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance. The chair recognizes Councilmember Basil Dua to introduce your guest, and then Councilmember Basil Dua will lead us in the pledges.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Imam Khalid Shaheed was born and raised in Jackson, Mississippi, the son of a Baptist preacher and devout Christian mother. He received a bachelor degree from the University of Southern Mississippi. And an EJISA, which is a license diploma authorizing its holder to transmit a certain text or subject from Zayed's House of Islamic Culture Imam Training Program in Al Ain Abu Dhabi, UAE. Yep. He has been married to Betty Shaheed for 42 years, and they have three children. He has been the resident imam of Dallas Masjid al-Islam for 16 years. Originally a member of the Nation of Islam, he accepted and converted to classical mainstream Islam, following the Quran and life example of Prophet Muhammad, under the guidance of Imam Warith Deen Muhammad in 1975. He is a member and one of the founders of Faith Forward Dallas, a member of the Muslim Jewish Advisory Council of Dallas, former member of North Texas Islamic Council Executive Board, IQRA Intrafaith Council, National Black United Front, South Dallas, Dallas NAACP, and is a supporter participant in Dallas Safe Conversations Program. He is the founder of Mecca, the founder of the Beacon of Light Outreach, and co-founder of DFW Islamic Charity Day, which is now called the Day of Dignity, and established daily prayer at Masjid al-Islam. With God's permission, he has dedicated his life to uniting, working with, and serving all people. In July of 2016, he was invited to the White House to be part of the first ever Muslim holiday celebrated at the White House. President Obama was the host of this historic event, and the event took place in the ultra-elegant East Wing of the White House. Thank you and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Let us pray. With the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate, the loving, the kind, the creator, we are eternally grateful to thee. We thank you for this day you've given to us, for its blessings, its opportunities, its challenges. May we appreciate each day that comes to us. Bless us with strength. Bless us with guidance. Guide us to pure convictions. Let us be for truth and justice, no matter who or what is against it. Let us be the light that we seek from thee. Dear Lord, we pray that you work through this assembly and work through all of us to make this city the abode of peace, the abode of justice, the abode of progress for all its citizens. Especially, dear Lord, for those who have been left out of this progress, who have not experienced progress, who have not tasted the progress of this city. You are our sustainer. Our God, help this assembly to fulfill all its obligations as servants to all the citizens of this city. Amen. States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you. I believe we have two special recognitions today, one by Councilmember Gates and then followed by another by Councilmember Navarez. Ms. Gates.
Good morning, and if I could ask Deputy Mayor Pro Tem McGrew to join me. We have a special recognition today recognizing Project Safe Neighborhood. Just to give you a little background, Project Safe Neighborhood is a Department of Justice program that has been working in both the Vickery Meadow area as well as part of Mr. McGrew's district on the northwest part of Dallas. And recently they were awarded the Attorney General's Excellence in Law Enforcement Award given to this project, the Dallas Project Safe Neighborhood Initiative. The community prosecutor, Cody Robinson, served as a member of the PSN team. And this, the award in conjunction with the Department of Justice annual Attorney General Awards, and there are only two of these awards given in this particular category, so it's prestigious and coveted. I want to thank this. So it was involved our city attorney's office, our DPD, but also our district attorney's office. But it was a real collaboration of efforts, including our fire department, code compliance, and all. And it's still ongoing. So I'm going to read with you. You want to do the names first, or you want me to do the? I'm going to let Deputy Mayor Pro Tem read all the names of those that have been involved, and then we're going to I'll read the proclamation, have him do all the names, and have everybody come forward and do a photo. So they recently traveled October 23rd, they were given this award in D.C. Whereas Project Safe Neighborhood is a nationwide initiative that brings together the federal, state, local, and tribal law enforcement officials, prosecutors, and community leaders to identify the most pressing violent crime problems in a community and develop comprehensive solutions to address. And whereas the Project Safe Neighborhood program is designed to create safer neighborhoods and to reduce gun and gang violence by employing a research-driven, intelligence-led, and problem-solving approach to crime prevention. The Dallas PSN was named Operation Badge 10934 in honor of Dallas Police Officer Regilio Santander. And whereas prosecutors, agents, and officers of the Dallas PSN Task Force routinely meet with local community groups and hold events designed to educate and engage the public in the project on how the community can assist in reducing violence. Whereas the project includes the direct and significant coordination of the Dallas Police Department, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, the Drug Enforcement Administration, United States Marshal Service, Dallas County Sheriff's Office, Texas Department of Public Safety, the District Attorney, the Dallas City Attorney, and researchers from Texas Christian University. The Dallas PSN Task Force was awarded the Attorney General's Excellence in Law Enforcement, the 67th Annual Attorney General's Award in Washington, D.C., for its extraordinary work. Now, I, Jennifer Gates, City Council Member, Representative of Eric Johnson, Mayor of City of Dallas, and behalf of the entire council, extend special recognition to the members of Project Safe Neighborhood Task Force and their significant contribution to this initiative, and do here proclaim November 19th, Dallas Project Safe Neighborhood Recognition Day. So.
So it's a huge honor to have everybody here today, all those that have been working towards this effort for quite a while now. It is, I think it's the best, colleagues, of how collaboration really does impact violent crime in our city. And not only do they really focus on some of the toughest areas and biggest challenges that we have, but by working with all the different entities together, they also spend a great deal of time in the community and working to engage the community on really problem solving that is helpful for everybody. And so it's my honor to recognize those involved. It starts at the top with the leadership of the U.S. Attorney, Erin Neely Cox, and her team from the Department of Justice. Thank you. District Attorney John Cruzo, thank you for being here and all your efforts in this, as well as those from the FBI, DEA, ATF, DPS, U.S. Marshals, city attorneys, and DPD. And so I will start a list. I'm not going to get everybody, but I want to hit as many as I can. And then at the end, I'll just ask everybody to stand if you're involved. So FBI Special Agent in Charge, Dan Odom, DEA, Eduardo Chavez, ATF, John Wester, DPS Major Vince Luciano, U.S. Marshal Frederick Frazier, Assistant U.S. Attorney P.J. Meidel, Assistant U.S. Attorney Nicole Dana, Assistant U.S. Attorney Catherine Miller, Assistant U.S. Attorney Melanie Smith, Morgan Murphy, FBI Task Force Officer Mike Ruler, FBI Special Agent Heather Burton, Assistant District Attorney Tommy Adams, FBI Supervisor Gil Valle, City Attorney Cody Robinson, and our leadership in the Dallas Police Department that's been working so hard in these efforts. And I again, leadership of PJ Meidel and the U.S. Attorney's Office has been incredibly helpful. So if you would all please stand and come up here, we'll take a picture with our council to honor you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, we have another recognition. Council Member Narvaez.
Hey, but just so you know. Good morning. Good morning. How are you doing?
Are we doing another one right now? Yeah. Excuse
me. Yeah.
Good morning, everyone. So this next special recognition is very near and dear to the West Dallas community. As you can see, there's a whole bunch of students here, and they are from St. Mary of Carmel Catholic School that is in West Dallas. And this year, they are celebrating their 75th anniversary as a school in West Dallas. They've done a lot of events this year to help raise money. Earlier this year, colleagues that were on the past council, you may remember that we approved a zoning change so that they could begin the remodel and expansion of their school, which is going to be an exciting event once it's completed, because they're still in a lot of the original buildings, and they are very ready for their brand new school, aren't they? So we're going to do the special recognition part, and kids and students and parents and faculty, staff, so you all know, we're going to do the special recognition, and then we'll bring you all up to take a picture, and then it'll all be done. And unfortunately, I got to send you all back to school, okay? Sound good? All right. So whereas the Catholic community of St. Mary of Carmel dates back to 1937, when a young missionary priest from Spain, Father Sebastian, began working with West Dallas Catholics. And whereas Father Sebastian's dream of opening a Catholic school was realized in 1944 when the current middle school was built at the corner of Singleton and Vilbig. And whereas the Sisters of the Holy Spirit and Mary Immaculate graciously agreed to staff the new St. Mary of Carmel Catholic School and continued in the ministry of serving the community until Sister Margaret Kenny retired in 2015. Whereas St. Mary of Carmel Catholic School has continuously served the West Dallas community for 75 years, providing a quality Catholic pre-K through 8 grade education in a safe, nurturing environment. And whereas St. Mary of Carmel Catholic School is dedicated to building the kingdom of heaven by forming saints and scholars with the goal of sending all its students to college and heaven. And whereas St. Mary of Carmel Catholic School graduates are successful in high school, college, and beyond, continuing their studies at Jesuit College Prep, Ursuline Academy, Bishop Dunn, Bishop Lynch, Cristo Rey, Townview, El Centro's Early College Program, and other area public, private, and charter high schools, and completing their academic careers in colleges nearby and across the nation, including Harvard, Duke, and the University of Notre Dame. And whereas St. Mary of Carmel Catholic School, believing that economic status should not determine accessibility to a quality Catholic education, and that education is the key that can open doors of opportunity, has established effective partnership with its various diocesan, community, institutional, and individual donors, which has permitted it to set tuition rates at levels affordable for its families and to provide almost 80% of its students with tuition assistance or scholarships. And whereas St. Mary of Carmel Catholic School continues to shine brightly as a beacon of hope to West Dallas by pursuing its vision of delivering academic excellence with a Catholic identity with sustainable operational vitality through the assembly of a talented and committed faculty and staff under the capable direction of its principal, Mrs. Caitlin Aguilar, as guided and supported under a robust governance model by the school's board of directors and the Diocese of Dallas Catholic Schools office. Now, therefore, I, Omar Narvaez, on behalf of Eric Johnson, the mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the Dallas City Council, on November 19, 2019, in appreciation for its 75 years of service to the families of West Dallas seeking academic excellence with a Catholic identity for their children, do hereby extend special recognition to St. Mary of Carmel Catholic School. Is it okay if we go ahead and take a picture? I don't know if others wanted to say anything, or y'all are ready to take a picture. Great. Hey, Anthony.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
guys. Get a picture.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Where did that come from?
I don't know, but I got a little information over there for that.
You got an altercation?
Okay. Thank you. Madam Secretary. Open microphone speakers.
Thank you and good morning. There are three registered speakers for this morning. They will be Eddie Probst, Tina Hernandez-Patterson, and Dolores Phillips. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the City Council shall be removed from the room. Individuals are given 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the time at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop. Address your comments to Mayor Medrano only. Also, if you have any handouts, go ahead and hand it to the officer to my right, as it will affect your speaking time. Your first speaker is Eddie Probst.
Good morning, how y'all doing? I'm here about this housing for senior citizens in our district. Yes. Oh, you know, we have a lot of housing problems in our community for our old senior citizens, and I've been working with this for the past year. I go through a lot of documents on paperwork that I have to bring in for senior citizens. There's a lot of work, even on the Social Security card when they can't come out and do stuff. We have to come back again just to get the information on the back of the thing. There's a bunch of back and forward work going on at the city, you know, trying to work with senior citizens in our district and the South Dallas district. And they, you know, last time I was here, we were trying to talk about housing. We were talking about most of the money need to be fixed on the crumbling highways. They're shaking, you know. And that means that holds us back in the community. Now, this tornado that just hit over on Northwest Highway, that's shaking because I feel more funding is going that way this week. You know, that means we're going to still be waiting in line. I don't care if we number 200 or number one on this housing thing. Y'all still looking over us. And another thing that we lost in our community is what's going on with all this crime rate. You know, do these bullets got addresses on them? You know, where are these guns coming from? Did anybody just drop off a load of guns in a U-Haul truck and some teenagers got a hold to them? Because these bullets ain't got no addresses, you know. And right now, all this crime rate that's going on again with teenagers, these guns coming from somewhere. And I know ain't nobody breaking no house getting these guns, because ain't nobody calling the police about their guns being stolen. And last time I heard some stuff, you know, that probably police were throwing their guns out on the street, because they know how to buy 5 and 6 guns, go to the gun show, and stock their guns. Did their house get broke in? I know these bullets got an address, and I'd like y'all to investigate that, too. And Dwayne Crowley, he's down at the Lou Sterrett. I want to know what's going on. Do he have a court date coming up? Do he have some state evidence going on around here that he finna shut down? You know, because everything is going so fast in the city of Dallas, making my head spin. Because I've been coming to the city of Dallas 1998, talking the same deal about our community. And I watched them come over and bring $2 million in our community and tell us, you just one man, you don't stand in this community. You know, but I watched these churches take those $2 million and don't do nothing. You know, like St. Philip Church, Good Street Baptist Church, Mount Olive Baptist Church. They don't know how to play with that money in the community. So they have to give it back to the whites. You know, I just want y'all to know, we know what's going on with this money thing in Dallas. And it ain't for the community. And we need to wake up and come together.
Tina Hernandez Patterson.
Hello, my name is Tina Hernandez Patterson. I'm a trustee on the Dallas Police and Fire Pension Board and have served for the last 2 years and recently reelected to the board in September for an additional 3 years. Each time I was put through a rigorous nomination process followed by an equally diligent electoral process. My qualifications were reviewed, scrutinized, and virtually picked apart by pension members. House Bill 3158 mandates that I show expertise in a few financial areas as it pertains to business, investment, accounting, real estate, and actuarial sciences. I'm here before this committee to express my concern. My concern that the police and fire are held to a higher standard when qualifying trustees than the mayor's trustees appointees. I want to express my concern regarding our vetting process, which results in appointees that possess little to no financial qualifications to remedy such a troubled pension system. While I do not know of any due diligence or vetting process that has occurred, I do know the following. I know that the mayor has met with the pension chairman, Bill Quinn, only once. I know that he has provided 6 to 7 recommendations that have either been not discussed or ignored completely. I know that we have 2 appropriately qualified trustees, Nick Merrick and Neilan Youngblood, that would have gladly stayed on another term if they were asked. Let me add that these 2 individuals are one of the sharpest financial minds the Dallas Financial Committee has to offer, and they have made immeasurable contributions to the progress of the pension fund. I also know that their departure will leave a massive void of knowledge and experience as it pertains to this pension fund specifically. What I do not know and do not understand is the mayor appointee list and how their expertise and skill set adheres to the House Bill 3158 and why the mayor thinks 2 lawyers and a benefits specialist are appropriate candidates. The pension is not a legal problem anymore. It is a financial problem. Let me reiterate, it is a financial problem. The pension as it exists today is still on shaky ground. It is in tenuous ground. It is underfunded by 50%, and of that 50% that it is funded, it is an asset. Those legacy assets are in alternatives, in direct investments that plague this city. They require finesse on the workouts, so not to diminish any further value. Such an endeavor requires the most robust financial minds. It is my fiduciary duty and my moral obligation to go before the record and say we are perpetuating the ills of the past. It has been said that previous trustees unwittingly caused the pension downfall because they did not know what the long-term effects of their actions would create. Is it fiscally responsible to place misqualified candidates to be stewards of the largest financial liability this city has to date? So I plead that the appointees' qualifications be reevaluated, reassessed by the mayor. And if he chooses not to reconsider, then I appeal to the appointees and ask that they step aside and to withdraw. It is my right and just to ask because of the Dallas Police Fire deserves more, and Dallas taxpayers deserves more as well. Thank you for your time and consideration of what I have to say today.
Dolores Phillips.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor.
Dolores Phillips.
Yes, hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Councilmember Kleiman.
Yeah. I just wanted to thank the board member from Dallas Police and Fire for coming and speaking to that. As you know, it's the mayor's exclusive domain to select members for the board, and having served on that board, I appreciate the hard work you and the board members are doing to try to financially right the ship there. Unfortunately, this council has no input to that, to those selections, but do very much appreciate what you're doing there and recognize, indeed, that there's a long way to still to go there and just encourage you to keep working on that. So thank you.
Dolores Phillips.
Dolores Phillips. Address 567 West Dickey Road, Apartment A, Grand Prairie, Texas, 75051. You do have handouts. They're also filed with the city secretary's office. I would like to say that 99.9% of the officers on the Brady's list were set up to fail. In your handouts, you have 9 pages. In those pages, it is showing that the officers Darren Harris, Jerry Thames, and Sean Brown, who were fired on or about October 25th, 2019, are your latest scapegoats. I'm going to share something with you. I shared with you that they were going to be knocking. They knocking now, and you're acting like you don't understand. When you arrested me October 25th, 2013, by premeditation because you wanted to intercept court documents that I emailed to the copy center downstairs, you obstructed justice. In 2009, when you altered 911 calls and said they were never made, the meeting that Merrill Rollins prearranged October 2013 was 2 to 3 weeks prior to October 25th, 2013. When you see these officers being fired for less than what their Chief Hall and the other top superiors are masking, then they are following in the footsteps of the chief and the other superiors. So why aren't the chief and the superiors getting fired as well? I want to humbly share with you that I do not fight with law enforcement. You have me using hands and feet as weapons. You release video. You erased all the video of the meeting that was held at 1400 South Lamar on the first floor. You did not show me using hands and feet because it was never an altercation. It was never a physical altercation. I never did have to be restrained. And you did so to continue your cover-up within a cover-up. And your corruption is bigger than what former Chief Police Joel Fitzgerald is speaking of right now in the court to get his job back. But because I am a citizen and I'm representing myself, you do what you do best, and you use blacks against blacks to bully them. Well, with that being said, FBI is coming if they're not already here. United States Department of Justice is coming if they're not already here. I'm going to testify in the court of law under sworn oath to your corruption and your ongoing cover-up within a cover-up. And to add, Dwayne Carraway is your latest scapegoat. If he is guilty of what is accused, how can he be indicted and found guilty for less than what he masked? Matter of fact, all of you are the faces of corruption, whether you want to admit it or not. So when you took $1,000 and $2,000 here for your campaign or whatever you was doing, you should have took it as the money that is owed to
your
you
time is up.
For your corruption. So if it is what it is and you
Thank
are
you.
Corrupt, you should be getting quarterly bonuses for your corruption.
This concludes your open microphone speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We have one more quick announcement. Councilman Atkins, do you want to? So the kickoff for the 11th annual Home for the Holidays campaign is set for Tuesday. Councilmember Atkins, District 8, the SMU Mustangs football team. It'll be here in the flag room at noon on Tuesday, November 19th. So I know that that's I've been to the Home for Holidays. It's a really good event for the community, and I'm glad to see it continue, Mr. Atkins. Thank you.
We'll now move to your voting agenda. Agenda item 1 is approval of minutes of the November 6, 2019 City Council meeting.
Do you have a motion? So a motion by Mendelson, second by Atkins. All those in favor? All those opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Agenda item 2 is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning we have individual and officer appointments. This item will be split into two separate motions to allow an individual to be appointed to the board before being appointed officer of the board. Your nominees for individual appointments to the Board of Adjustment, Damian N. Williams is being nominated by Councilmember Blewett. To the Arts and Culture Advisory Commission, Philip E. Collins is being nominated by Councilmember Basil Dua. Mr. Collins meets the Cultural Institutions Management Special Qualification. To the Citizen Homelessness Commission, Letitia C. Owens is being nominated by Councilmember Thomas. Ms. Owens meets the Experienced Homelessness Special Qualification. To the City Plan and Zoning Commission, Wayne R. Garcia is being nominated by Councilmember Blewett. And to the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center Board, Jerry Lee Christian is being nominated by Mayor Johnson.
Thank you. Do we have a motion? Motion by Councilmember West.
Second.
By Councilmember Bazadua. Discussion, Councilmember Blewett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd just like to take this opportunity to say that while I've only been on council a little while, the current city plan commissioner is a guy named Paul Ridley, who has served the city well for 8 years on plan commission and a couple of years as landmark commissioner. I think that we are fortunate to have city servants like him who put in this hard work, and specifically in District 14, which is a very complex district with a lot of zoning issues, a lot of disparate neighborhoods. I would just like to point out that I am incredibly grateful for his service. It is difficult to make changes after this amount of time, and I will be bringing him back for a special recognition later on, but I just want to recognize him and his service, and let it be known publicly that I appreciate it.
Thank you. Discussion? All those in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries.
Your officer appointments. Jerry Lee Christian is being nominated chair of the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center Board by Mayor Johnson. And James Poss is being nominated chair of the Reinvestment Zone 9 Board, Vickery Meadow, by Mayor Johnson.
Second. Any discussion? All those in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Mayor, your briefing continue.
I'll go ahead and hand it over to our city manager, T.C. Bronix, for our briefing on Rivershawn Park Development Maintenance and Operation Agreement.
Thank you, Mayor. This morning's Rivershawn Park Department Maintenance and Operations Agreement briefing is being presented by John Jenkins, who's walking up to the table now, the Interim Director for Parks and Recreation Department. Accompanying John is John Lawrence, the Interim Assistant Director, and Trent Williams, Senior Program Manager for Facility Development, as well as Mr. Robert McFarland, the Rivershawn Park Sports and Entertainment Representative. John, I'll turn it over to you.
All right, thank you. All right, good morning, Mayor Pro Tem and members of the council. We're here today to brief the council regarding the Rivershawn Park Development Maintenance and Operation Agreement. Before I get started, I want to also recognize that we do have a couple of current park board members in the audience. We have our park board president, Calvert Collins Braxton, and we also have Jesse Moreno, and we also have Bo Slaughter. Okay. All right. Today I wanted to provide you a quick overview. And
I just want to point out that my park board's commissioner, Lane Connor, is also in attendance. Right, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Didn't see Lane.
Okay. All right. All right. Just want to provide you a quick overview and purpose. Present the existing development, maintenance, and operation information. Provide background on development and maintenance and operation agreement. Want to discuss the benefits of the agreement to the city. Demonstrate how this opportunity relates to the Park Board's strategic direction to promote the synergy between parks and economic development to enhance the recreational experience, and also how staff has continued to address the concerns of other board members as well as council members as it relates to parking, noise, lighting, removal of trees, public access, city usage, and revenue sharing. Just some quick history of Rivershawn Park. This original 36-acre park purchased by the City of Dallas for $31,128 from the estate of John D. Cole. It officially opened in 1915. The ball field was built in 1919, and it became one of our first lighted fields in the park system in the late 1930s. The park covers 41.26 acres, which includes a recreation center, basketball court, pavilion, playground, tennis court, and trails. The present area we'll be discussing today consists of 4.25 acres, or about 11% of the total park area. Just briefly, some of the previous improvements, which included the 2004 master plan, and also lighting improvements, restoration of trails, WPA historic preservation work, and landscaping. Current conditions of the existing ball field consist of 700 permanent non-accessible bleacher seats, antiquated non-accessible restrooms, and unusable concession facility. As you can see, just a picture of the ball field. The next couple of pictures will just give you an example of the conditions of the existing conditions at the existing park, conditions of the existing stadium, bleachers, concession area, the existing restrooms and dugout. Just a couple of pictures of the current infrastructure and the existing parking lot. Next, I want to talk about some of the current users and usage at the existing ball field. In particular, I want to point to the overall usage. Currently, there's five different groups that utilize the facility for a total number of reservations, which is about 104 days. And also, as far as total hours, it's 477 hours. And as far as fees collected, it's $14,168 a year. Our annual cost to maintain the athletic fields is $7,600 a year. The total cost to maintain the entire park is $96,000. I want to discuss some of the previous action by the board. On December the 1st, 2016, the Park and Recreation Board was briefed regarding the potential opportunities for development and operation of the new ballpark at Rivershawn. July the 12th, 2017 through September the 12th, 2017, public meetings with the community and stakeholders were held. January 17th, 2018, RFP was sent out. The agreement was approved by the board and city council, but was never executed due to lack of funding from the potential operator. June 26, 2019, the second RFP was issued. And on July 19, 2019, one proposal was received, and that proposal was received from Rivershawn Park Sports and Entertainment. The owner of, and I'm going to refer to Rivershawn Park Sports and Entertainment, RPSE, going forward. The owner of RPSE is Donnie Nelson. Just some brief background. RPS has exclusive control of license for Major League Rugby, American Association of Independent Professional Baseball, and United Soccer League. Just briefly going through the rest of the team members, Amrock Promotional Enterprises, Mesa, Log Capital Partners, and HKS Architects. Some of the highlights of the proposed agreement as far as the operation is, this term of the agreement will be for 20 years with one 10-year and two 5-year renewal optional extensions. RPSC will provide all maintenance of the facility and fields and parking lot. RPS will use the funds for the naming and branding rights, sponsorship, and season ticket sales, suite sales to offset annual operating expenses. And now I want to focus on, as relates to the scheduling and who you, as far as the potential use of the facility. As you can see, there will be multiple use for sports, baseball, soccer, rugby, lacrosse, concerts as well. But in particular, I want to point out about Forest Eye usage, in particular the recreation leagues. Currently, if you may recall on the previous page, I pointed out we utilize the facility about 7 times a year now. RPSC has agreed to make sure at a minimum that we will run a league in the fall as well as in the spring and as well as tournaments in the summer that will
will include up to about 20 to 30 uses per year. That was very important to the park board, that we definitely have that in the agreement. Also, it will be available for community events. And also, one of the priorities of the park board was to make sure any existing users that they would accommodate their current schedule and the number of days that the existing users now utilize the facility, and they have agreed to it. Just speaking about some of the improvements, RPSC replaced the existing Rivershawn baseball field and bleachers with a new improved facility, which includes 2,000 seating area, additional 1,500 bleacher seats, includes public restrooms accessible to all users, even when the ball field is closed. Also, as part of their proposal, they also included that they will create an all-abilities baseball field, and the Kershaw's Challenge are partnering with RPSC for the development, operation, and maintenance of the all-abilities field. On page 27, I just wanted to highlight the financials. As I mentioned earlier about their event days, they're proposing anywhere from 118 days to 136 days. Their estimated attendance is anywhere from 229K to 295K. And potential revenue is 8.4 up to about 10.1 for years 1 through 5. And in their first 2 years, they are projected a loss. And then in year 5, well, in year 3, 4, and 5, they project to start making a profit. Once again, just shows you the master plan and the design and construction of the athletic fields. Next page. As I mentioned earlier, it'll be for multiple youth sports. And now I would like to focus on the benefits to the city. One, the city would receive a new ballpark facility with an estimated construction cost of $15 million. We definitely think we will see increased usage by our youth baseball leagues. Currently, like I said, in RPS proposal, they plan on utilizing up to about 136 days, give or take. Our current city usage is about 104 days. We do think with the improvements, we would get more city usage as well. We'll also benefit the public schools as well, the opportunity to utilize the improved facility. We will receive enhanced maintenance, and it'll also be a venue for community events and activities. Next, I would like to point out, in our current system, we do not have any artificial turf fields in our entire park system. This would definitely be a first in the city. It would allow us to help be able to extend our sports season, because currently, because we have grass fields, and we just experienced a freeze this year, so we had our fields went in dormancy because we had a freeze. And so we normally only be able to utilize our athletic fields for about 8 months out of the year. With this partnership, we think we'll be able to get more athletic play probably about 10 months out of the year. As far as the revenue arrangements, RPSC has agreed, I'm still getting over a cold. They agreed to fund all the maintenance, but all the revenues would be retained for improvements of Rivershawn Park, including also setting up a scholarship fund for participants who may not be able to afford the league fees. And in conclusion here, I just want to point out that the park board approved the following deal points as relates to the revenue sharing. My team and I, we are continuing to negotiate with RPSC as it relates to the financial terms. However, they have agreed that we would like to have a similar arrangement that we have with our golf pros, or the similar arrangement that we have with our Fair Park First contract. That is, yeah, we could agree to these terms for the first 5 years, and that both parties need to agree when we go into year 6 that we have an opportunity to renegotiate our financial arrangement as far as the revenue sharing. And so
staff. We will continue to negotiate the final deal before we bring it back to the council. As far as the next steps, it's outlined, but I know as far as their time schedule, they're trying to start construction in January of 2021 and hope to have the construction completed by July 2022. At this time, my briefing is concluded. If you have any questions, I have everyone here that can help address your questions.
Any discussion?
Councilmember Bazaldua. Thank you, Mayor. And thank you for the presentation. I have a few questions about the correlation of the master plan that was put out for Reverchon and the location of the second ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
The ballpark that is going to be given to the city.
Yes.
Is going to be placed in the meadow.
Yes.
And the original master plan was to restore preserve the meadow. Correct?
Yes.
So what's changed with the priorities?
Okay. I might ask Trent Williams, who's our senior manager, project manager, to answer that question.
Good morning. I would like to address that by citing that the previous master plan held the meadow as a natural area because that has been its traditional use. It had never been developed for anything but that. However, over the time, there was a volleyball court placed in that in the last 20 years or so. The change that we're proposing allocates a space out of the traffic lanes and away from the hustle and bustle of the regular park traffic for the use of the All Abilities Field participants. So when they're delivered to that spot, they have kind of their own area to play in and to be safe in without being in the like I said, the hustle and bustle of the rest of the park. So that we're proposing that. It's been proposed. That's what we think is a proper usage because it's kind of a low impact for that particular natural meadow area.
The RFP did not call for this part of the project, correct?
No, it did not specify that be provided.
And it wasn't a part of the original proposal either?
Yes, it was.
I
believe it was proposed that they would be a partner in developing that particular amenity in the park.
And, John, do you mind telling me what the difference was in the original RFP from January of 18 to June of 19?
Yeah, as far as what the operator submitted, the original RFP, I think, only included for 2,500 seating, and the new proposal includes up to 3,500.
So why are we not using the existing footprint only?
I think this is, besides the bleacher area, this is still pretty much within the same footprint, besides with the additional 1,500 in seating
and
1,000.
Okay. I know that there were some points brought up at the park board meeting,
yes,
specifically about adding to the RFP, the proposal, and what was originally asked versus what was proposed. And I'm just curious on why more was accepted than what was asked.
Yeah, so the RFP doesn't preclude you from, you know.
I'm aware of that.
Yeah, so they it was like, here's something.
But we also put an RFP out that was essentially correlating with the master plan's
yes
overall objective, and then the proposal that we got back does not.
Yes, but it still meet the requirements.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I'll come back. Thank you.
Yes.
Is that all you have for now? Bazaldua? Councilmember? Councilmember Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple questions on page 42 and 43. So the naming This includes naming rights. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then on 43, it says advertising will have city approval. So is that the same for naming rights as well?
Oh, yes. And yes, it would require the director's approval as far as any type of naming rights. It would require the city approval. Yes.
Okay. So an advertising. So we can make sure that advertising would. Do we have an advertising policy within our parks currently now?
No, we do not. Not advertisement. We do have a sponsorship policy.
So do we have, and what does that entail? Can you advertise alcohol or can you?
We don't have a policy per se, as far as a park board policy or a department policy. We just follow the city ordinance, but we haven't had any takers on advertisement in our park system that I can think of.
But we have sponsors, so we'll let someone put a name and sponsor, like
yes.
A pavilion or a sponsor.
Yes.
Okay. Is there alcohol sales, or will there be alcohol sales here or not?
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Is there currently?
No.
No.
But they could apply for a permit that would allow this approved by the board for alcohol sales.
During the events that
yes.
they're holding, and they have to have the security. And
yes.
And then I would like to ask our park board chair, Calvert Collins, to just kind of opine on the parks board position on this. Can I do that? Yes. Thanks.
Thank you, Councilmember Gates and Council and Mayor as well. I'm Calvert Collins Bratton, President of the Dallas Park and Recreation Board, 4618 Heatherbrook Drive. We've had a lot of discussion about this at Park Board over the last really year and a half since the very first RFP came out. And the Park Board, I can attest, was very hopeful when that first group came to us. And it was a for-profit group as well, out of town. They were proven venue operators in other cities. And we had a lot of optimism that they would be able to build a nice ballpark and that they would program it, and it turned out they couldn't raise the funds that the city required by the time they started construction. So that fell through. So then a second RFP was put out, and we had one respondent, and the park department and board felt like this was a very good response. We have a proven operator in RPSE. They're local, and they certainly know how to market, operate, and maintain sports venues better than the park department can. So to give you a little bit more context about the history of this park and how it fits into the master plan for the department, we believe this passed 11-2 on October 10th at Park Board, had a lot of input, as I had previously mentioned. As it was said at Park Board a month ago, we have a dilapidated ballpark. You just saw examples of that. It's not really even very usable. It is obviously sometimes a homeless encampment. It is not where North Dallas High School or the Mexican American Baseball League or the Dallas Veterans Professional Baseball League wants to play, and we can't blame them. It is not where fans want to go for any kind of community event, sporting or otherwise. We have a proven group ready to step up to the plate with almost $15 million in capital investment ready to be invested in our park system. There's a lot of misinformation that has been propagated about this deal. If it falls through, the ballpark stays ours. This is zoned parkland. That will never change. It will forever be zoned parkland. So this is not a real estate deal. This is not a land giveaway. This is about building and utilizing a destination venue in a large urban park, many people call this our Central Park. I grew up playing at this park. I love it. I love the meadow. I think This is something we want to enhance and make a destination for all of Dallas, not just central parts of the city, but for all of Dallas, and make it an even more equitable park. In reviewing the Park Department's master plan that passed 5 years ago, one of the overarching goals was to create, build, and strengthen partnerships to create a more sustainable park system. The master plan also references strategies that are applicable to this project, which include enhancing trail use by providing amenities and destinations, which this certainly would because the Katy Trail abuts Reversion. It also enhances parks with special events programming, tournaments, and festivals to bring to new user groups, and it seeks opportunities to generate revenue along trails. Other than bond programs, the master plan states there really is no source of funding for large capital improvements, so the plan suggests developing secure funding to build new or upgrade existing park facilities. Additionally, that master plan suggests adding support spaces to accommodate large citywide gatherings. And finally, again, this plan is 5 years old, providing recreational opportunities for individuals with physical and cognitive deficiencies to improve social and emotional well-being. So this project achieves all of that. This group wants to make this happen. We believe the park board wholeheartedly put our stock, our belief in them. They live here, they work here, and they want to see Reverchon flourish, just as many of us in this room do. A renovation of this ballpark has never been supported in recent bond programs, so here is our opportunity, your vote on December 11th, to restore Reverchon to its glory. Thank you.
You done?
Councilmember Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for the great speech that we just heard. I'm going to disagree with quite a few of the items that were in there. I agree with the equity, and I agree with the revitalizing of the park. But I have a lot of questions that I don't think that were very fair and weren't answered correctly by the park department when you were going through this. So would it be fair to say that the obviously decrepit condition of this historic ballpark today is basically due to the longstanding neglect by the Park and Recreation Department?
I would not.
So the answer is yes, because you're not able to answer it, because you did not keep up the maintenance on this park. At the September 19th, 2019 Park Board meeting, former Director Winters said that renovating this ballpark has been on the Reverchon Park needs list for many bond issue cycles, but has just never been made a priority. It has just never been made a priority, but it's been on the needs list for a very long time. The pictures that you just showed us does not show that shows neglect, absolutely neglect of this ballpark. And now the problem is that I mainly have is that the Dallas Morning News said that this is the hottest real estate market in Dallas, that it's $350 a square foot is what stuff is going for right now in this area. $350 a square foot. So we're going to let a company come in, scrape a historic facility to build up a brand new one that looks historic in nature, and then that would add up to, on the 4.25 acres, would be valued at $64.79 million. That right there makes me realize why RPSC, whatever their name is, RPSE, wants to build here. $64 million of land in the hottest market in Dallas. We should be taking care of this ourselves. This park is very valuable. It is historic to folks. Didn't it just recently get a legacy designation?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, Reverchon is a historic park with official legacy designation, residing on some of the most valuable land in the city of Dallas. It's a single-entry park with very limited access and very limited parking. Plus, it's already one of the most heavily used parks in Dallas. One of the already most heavily used parks in Dallas. And then I looked at that list, and I can't remember what slide it's on, and I see 6 to 12 concerts a year. Let's call it 12. That's a concert every month. Adding 1,500 more seats. We don't have the parking. All the parking is off-site, so we're going to increase traffic everywhere. You talk about safety, but yet we didn't take into account all the pedestrians that are going to be crossing Maple Avenue to get into this park. Is that correct?
I'll defer that to Robert. But yes, we looked at their plan. We looked at their plan as far as their parking, because there would be a they would be partnering with three parking with three businesses in the area.
Right, exactly. But one day something's going to happen, and that business is going to have something going on. Yeah. Trust me, I know how this works.
Yeah.
Because I've seen it happen before. This park is not prepared and it's not ready. It's already a well-utilized park. The rec center that's there already cannot handle the amount of guests that it has. The rec center is dilapidated and falling apart. I went and took a tour just to make sure I knew what I was talking about, because I do visit this park quite often. The rec center is in shambles. The gym is in shambles. It's an embarrassing rec center. And then we turn around and we look at the ballpark as well. It's embarrassing. The next thing that I have to ask on this is, why Rivershawn? Why Rivershawn?
Robert?
Well, first of all, we have to do a complete traffic study, meet all city codes. So as far as the traffic, you're talking in the subject.
No, I asked why Rivershawn. Why has Rivershawn been selected?
The previous question was about subjectively.
I'm not asking the previous question. I'm asking why Rivershawn.
Because it was responding to an RFP the city of Dallas issued, and we saw the need to revitalize.
How many changes have been made in the RFP since the original?
Well, I will disagree with your initial comment. The RFP issued 2,000 seats plus 1,500, so we responded to the RFP.
How many changes have been added in the RFP from the first original RFP to this latest RFP?
I don't know the changes between the first RFP and the second RFP. We responded appropriately to the second RFP. I can't.
Mr. Jenkins, can you answer that question, please?
I reviewed the two RFPs just in the last 24 hours to look at the different changes, and we see that they're very similar. The only difference being we reviewed the dates of presentation or feedback from the proposers to make sure we have stronger language in there to get a more scheduled review of the different stages of development and construction. That is our primary change in the two different documents.
So if we're going to scrape a ballpark and start all over and put it at Rivershawn, why wouldn't we want to put this somewhere else in a park that maybe could handle new traffic, handle new utilization?
Well, I would say the mic is not on. I mean, of course, all those parks would be considered, but the RFP that was put out was for Rivershawn Park.
Correct, but my question is, why not other parks?
I believe because of the historic history at Rivershawn back in the day when it was a minor league team that used to play there, and I'm pretty sure when they bid on it, they wanted to bring that type of use back to Rivershawn Park.
Mr. Mayor, I'm going to wait till the second round because I've got a lot more questions. Thank you.
Could I respond back about the maintenance? I just want to respond, Mr. Vias. There's not a lack of maintenance because of staff not maintaining what we have in our budget to maintain the ball fields. As far as the capital improvements, of course, that's a decision for – it's definitely on our needs assessment, but that's a priority for the board and the council as far as bond funding.
Councilmember Kleiman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, John and staff, for bringing this forward. I very much appreciate that y'all are interested in figuring out how to leverage partnerships in the city of Dallas to provide better park services for our community. I'm excited about the prospects of bringing additional visitors to this park, and also maybe want to clarify a few things, get a couple clarifications. With regards to revamping a long-term maintenance of the park, there was made mention of the potential that it's been on the needs inventory but has not been on the bond actual list. How is that bonds list developed? How are the priorities developed generally?
How priorities developed? Mm-hmm. Like I said, staff, we originate the needs. We hear from the community, we hear from council, we hear from board members.
Yeah, as I recall, and you mentioned that council and board members, as I recall, when we were doing 2017, y'all came to me and said, what are your priorities for the bond program? So it's hard to blame staff for the lack of this being on a bond program. it seems more likely to blame the council member and the board member for not putting it on. So, I mean, you guys put it out there, but what you did do was you looked for an opportunity to leverage the facility that we had and find private money to do it, and I really commend you for that. When you look at the value of this property, I heard quotes about this property may be worth, who knows, $60 million or something like that, and I don't know why someone would be advocating to sell the property like that when we should be keeping it in the park system. So I'm really glad that you're finding a use for it that's a park use and not saying this is such valuable property that we just need to sell it. So that's really important. And I know after being on the park board, it'd be very difficult for us to do that anyhow, take a referendum. So with that. The other thing I wanted to comment on is for the use in Rivershawn Park, especially with this all-abilities field. Very excited about that opportunity to offer active play to everybody in the city, and especially people that have need some assistance or need some abilities. The location specifically adjacent to Scottish Rite Hospital could not be better. Scottish Rite has really taken that park in under their wing and rooted out all the and helped us with our police department root out all the bad uses that were in that park that were there when I was growing up, and have turned it into really a gorgeous, beautiful park, and leveraging it to the benefit of the patients at Scottish Rite and their clients was a tremendous idea. And I'm not don't understand a criticism of we have an RFP and someone adds a little bonus item to it, and so now that's a bad thing. That seems odd to me, because I remember on many bond programs in the past, we've typically put down our list of baseline criteria, and then we add a list of amenities that we'd like to see also, and then we try to get as many additional amenities as possible when we do a bond program. So I'm excited to see the park get refreshed and redone. I'm excited to bring more Dallas folks and other folks into our city to use this park. I'm excited to see the number. We're basically going to double the number of used days there by doing this facility, and I'm excited to bring it to an all-abilities field. So, to me, it checks a lot of good boxes, and I wholeheartedly support it, and I'm hoping that, you know, we'll see a unanimous support for this item across the board, because I mean, supporting this is supporting all abilities, it's supporting utilization, it's supporting leverage, supporting partnerships, it's supporting our park system in ways that we did not do in the bond program. So I look forward to this coming on our agenda and voting in favor with all my colleagues. Thank you.
Councilmember West.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have a question. What areas of Rivershawn will no longer be available to the public with this proposal that are currently available to the public? Will we be losing any public accessible space, or is that not going to change? Anybody can answer that.
I see no change in the way the park is used now. The parking lot that's there now is a major traffic pattern to the Katy Trail and to the ballpark, of course, as it's used now. But those will stay in place as amenities and pathways, and literally there's no change in the way the park will be used.
Councilmember Mendelson.
Thank you. I think you've done a good presentation on why we should do this. My understanding is that the park board had a very long meeting, and to me that says there are a lot of questions. And those questions that people had weren't really presented in here. There have been a lot of articles in the media. Again, some of the disadvantages of this deal not presented. You have two slides of what are the benefits to the city.
Yes.
But I'm not seeing that other side. And if I can say to the city manager, this is an ongoing conversation where I feel like every presentation we need to get what are the advantages of what we're doing, what are the disadvantages, just the facts. I'd like to have staff's professional recommendation. In this case, I'd like to also have the park board's recommendation. But we seem to be missing that disadvantage, and we're only getting the positive presentation of what staff would like us to do. And that's actually my issue here. And that's all I'm going to say. Thank you.
Councilmember Blackman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a couple of questions. So we've talked about it being historic. What exactly is historic?
Sure.
The park itself is historic because of course its age. It was a very derelict part of town, and it was changed by the city 100 and something years ago to become a city park, really a jewel in the park system. It, by nature, it becomes historic from that standpoint. The structures that are there, some of which predate the New Deal era
on
structures.
On the park, not the baseball fields, but the park.
In the park itself, there the WPA structures that were built in the 1937 timeframe, which were restored, as the presentation showed, in the last few years, are the main historic structure in the park system itself, and it's part of the pathway system in the park. The baseball field, of course, was another amenity from the 1915-1920 era. Other than that, there was a historic well that has a background to it. So that's a historic background.
So is the ballpark itself historic, that is going to be rehabbed, I guess, because we're talking about historic features. And what we're seeing here with the dugouts and the concession stands, are those historic?
Those are historic only in the sense of their age. They do not have a historic designation.
So any of the rehab that is going to be done there will be bringing it to a, I guess, up to today's standards and refurbished?
Yes, it's seriously deficient in accessibility standards, and, of course, utilities do not meet any standards whatsoever.
Okay. We talk about the all abilities field, and I think Mr. Kleinman answered this will be utilized with Texas Scottish Rite, so they can, because I know it's the proximity, it's basically their back door.
Yes, it's right adjacent to their property line in the meadow, and there's opportunities, though not developed yet, to access that meadow from Scottish Rite. So I think they're in a position at the moment in their big project to create that access and make it more apparent, but they would be available to get there, yes.
So my next question is, why did we offer an RFP? I mean, it sounds like we invited people to say, hey, partner with us, we see this gem. Why did we do it? Because why would we? So go ahead, John.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I wasn't part of the original RFP process or the second. However, my understanding is that we were approached by a potential user, not unusual by anybody who approaches about potential use of a park. And my understanding, that's what happened a couple of years ago.
Okay, so originally it was done because somebody said, hey, we have an idea for the park to be utilized in a different and better way. The city responded to that. It didn't work out.
Yes.
And so we said, you know what, this does make sense. We need more partners because what is our needs there? Like how much, if we were to go and do everything that we needed, how much is that?
That's about $5 to $6 million.
And they're going to be putting in $15 million?
Yes.
Okay, only on the 11%, right?
Yes.
So the rest of the park is still available as it's setting right now?
Yes.
Okay, and so my last question is, would you have a trail coming by there? There's the Katy, and I know the Loop is kind of going to come over 35. Are there discussions on how that is going to connect? So if you want more pedestrian from the design district, and I know people can, you know, park and then, because we're trying to create a pedestrian walkable city, so I'm hoping that we utilize even around Maple, you know, crosswalks to allow more people to cross. I have White Rock Lake that's divided by Northwest Highway and Garland Road, and that's one thing I'm working on is creating pedestrian points to that park. And I know as we want to keep this a park, that's correct, right? It's not going to turn into private land.
No.
Because that has to go to voters.
Yes.
Okay, so it's just going to be a private park with the, but still maintained a public aspect of it.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
And that's what we heard from the council, some council members, well as the board, and that's what I have continued to work towards is to increase the public component of this deal.
Has anybody ever gotten hurt at this ball field? I mean, with all the, I saw the bleachers. I had kids who played baseball, and I don't know. And I see some really nice stadiums. So I'm just wondering if anybody, but you don't have to answer. Thank you.
Councilmember Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple questions. Is this the first RFP on the park for this type of agreement in the city?
With the potential use of a minor league baseball usage, the answer is yes.
Okay. To bring this park up to standard, what is the cost to bring it up?
To bring the baseball field.
The park itself.
Oh, the park itself, we have to look at the needs assessment. I'm going to defer to Trent. Are you familiar with the needs assessment for Rivershawn as a whole?
To a degree. The entire park has deficiencies that are scattered here and there. Mostly the project that we did back in 10 years ago created fixes for a lot of those issues. We have some accessible parking now. The ball field itself is the sore point in the entire park with respect to accessibility issues and lack of utilities and just team playability. The field itself is deteriorated to a point where it's no longer safe to play in the outfield. So it's we have mainly a focus on the ball field as if we had to center our needs at the present time. The rest of the park is working pretty well with respect to just natural enjoyment of the park.
So you didn't ask my question. So to bring it up, what do you think would cost it? Would it be a bond package to bring it up?
It would be a bond package to bring it up, and the ball field itself is $5 million, as stated before. The rest of the park probably needs another $2 to $3
million. So
the rec center itself is probably needs to be replaced in its entirety. So we're looking at $10 million to $12 million on that.
A rec center more than $10 million. I think I got one almost $20 million coming up. So to bring it up, you know, to the standards, if you had to do it all over again, we're probably looking at about $20 million or more, right, to a new rec center to bring all the fields up, and that would be a bond package.
That would
is that
be
correct?
Right. That's a good
yes.
That's a good
and
part.
So, and we are going to go out to the citizen to vote to make sure we get that, but also we'll be on the lead list and find out how much money we want to put on the parts to go to the voters to vote for it, right?
Correct.
So we're looking at something down the road, and when is our next bond package?
I think 2020, I'm not sure it'll be up to the council, but I think around 2024, 2023.
So, when's our next bond package?
2022 or 2023?
So 22, 23, so therefore, we say it takes 5 years to finish all our bond package, so that's another 5 years, that'd be 2027. Based on the construction costs and everything else, it'd probably be 2030. So we'd probably be looking at roughly maybe 11, 12 years before we bring this up. Is that a fair statement?
I'm sorry, council member, what was the statement?
My statement was that to go to the bond, to do a bond, 2022, Five years completed. That's what the city manager said we're going to do it. Another 3 year for construction. Yeah, I know the gym probably take a little time, so probably be 2030 before we be able to bring this property up, the rec center, and everything up to standards.
I would agree. Once if the bonds are approved by the voters, you're looking at probably at least 5 years from the time they're approved.
Right. I heard from staff, but I got my point board appointed here, Bo Slaughter, so here's my point board appointed. I want to know the communication through the point board. It was 11-2 vote. I just want to know what transitioned through that point board. Could I, Bo Slaughter, come back and just kind of give an overview, because you're my appointee, so you're my eyes and ears to that board, so I want to know what happened.
Good morning, City Council, Mayor Medrano. This has been an amazing process, and you've got two sides of the fence on all things. We know that.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Is the mic on?
Yes.
Okay. I said this has been an issue that we've not only been wrestling with, but we think that it's, you know, you and like Councilwoman Medelson said earlier, everybody has their opinion. We looked at this from the first proposal and the second proposal, and we, as a board, thought this was a benefit and a great deal for the city. I was for it. I think we voted 11-2 for it. This process, and as Councilman Kleinman said earlier, everybody has some dilapidated recreation centers and fields, but the board and the park department has so many resources. So if that council person does not push for that entity to be funded, we can't do it because we don't have it in our budget. I think this is a great deal for the city. The nonprofit that has joined with these is just outstanding, the Kershaw Foundation. And when you're doing stuff for disabled kids or adults, I don't see how we can avoid this. We can't afford it. We can't wait 10 years. Rivershawn has some real feelings for me. I'll tell this. I think if not for Rivershawn, I would not be here, because when black people could not go to that park, they had Willie Mays play there in 1953, and my mom met my dad there. And so I have heartfelt feelings for that. I think that we need to do this, and I'm for it.
Thank you. I might come back, though. Thank you.
Councilmember McGee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I mean, there is a lot to like about this presentation. I think you got good partners. You got a lot of resources coming in that weren't there otherwise. I love the aspect of the All Abilities field and access coming into it. We recently did a All Abilities playground at Flagpole Hill that's been a huge success. This is something, as I look selfishly just for a moment, that we want to see more of happening around the city. And specifically the area at 635 and Skillman, where we have land in a park desert and areas where we have tons of youth and tons of kids that are constantly begging for access to sports fields and additional leagues and other types of venues and this kind of thing. So I'm encouraged by what we're doing and how we're looking at this, and I just would encourage us to look at locations around the city as well. So I appreciate the work on this, and thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Blewett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There are a lot of things about this project that I like. There are a few things that I have questions on, but I'll just touch on the things that I like. I've been to that park. I've taken a tour of it. I wasn't a baseball player, but I know what a baseball field should look like. And when you go there and look at this, there are divots, there are rises, there are gullies. You can't play baseball in there. I'm a pretty big guy. Walked in the bleachers. I mean, you put 10 pounds on me and you're going through the woods. So it's all bad. So there's no question. It has to be repaired. It has to be updated. That's not even a question. The fact that we have a historic nature of that baseball field means that updating it, to me, isn't really disrupting the park, because it's been there a long time, and basically whatever a future baseball field will look like will be on the same footprint. And so that to me is an easy part of this park. Because it's fallen down so much, I don't see a lot of traffic there at all. When I go there, it feels pretty empty. And I think when you look at modern parks today, I mean, you can talk about Clyde Warren, and that's an easy one, but you can talk about Pacific and Main Street, and there's a whole bunch of parks, or even by me in East Dallas, Tietze Park, we brought in an aquatic center. And the modern definition of a park is different than the old definition of a park. So, again, I'll move from the baseball facility, and I'll go to Mr. Kleinman's point. I'll go back to the All Abilities Field. That's really the most interesting thing to me. I went to Scottish Rite, and I tried to find out how much they were interested in having access to a facility like that. Can any of you speak to the kids that come to Scottish Rite? Where they come from, a little bit about them?
Robert, you have some stats.
That's a very good point. And it's been about getting stakeholder, not just involvement, but input. And so we've met with Friends of Rivershawn and Scottish Rite. Mm-hmm. We've also employed HKS Architects as the main designer, but they're also the master planner of the full master planner renovation of Scottish Rite Hospital. So Mark Bateman and all the executive team, we've had several meetings with them, and so fully understanding how they could actually engage that park appropriately. You mentioned earlier that Rivershawn has adopted that park, but basically they've turned their back from an access perspective on that park because they don't feel it's a safe or conducive environment. And so even with the clinical psychologists that we're meeting with the Kershaw Foundation, for them engaging the park. But the hospital is extremely supportive of what we're doing there at Rivershine.
Where do the kids come from that go to Scottish Ranch?
One of the largest, the two largest zip codes, actually wrote them down, were 75217 and 75211. So Pleasant Grove. It's a very good even distribution throughout the whole metroplex. But they're drawing kids from as far north as Coppell, West Dallas, South Dallas. So we looked at a distribution. Almost 50% of the people they serve is south of I-30.
Are you familiar? I know you're not with Scottish Rite, but are you familiar with the types of conditions, the types of kids that they treat?
Yes. So many people, maybe a misconception is there's not a lot of overnight or the state. It's not an inpatient facility, as many people feel. They have limited beds. So their goal is to get people mobile pretty quickly. And so, but another aspect is the caregivers and siblings of the child is to make an environment for them. And when this all abilities field is not just a cute phrase, it is for all abilities, people with downs, people with wheelchairs. So they serve people with a lot of back and spine issues.
Yeah, I thought their specialty was more orthopedics and challenges like that.
Getting people mobile. So there's children that are in walkers, but their goal is to get them to have the best quality of life they have from a mobility standpoint. So this provides that environment.
My understanding also is that they reach out to economically disadvantaged kids as well, and how they provide their services. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, they are one of the largest funded. They have a large endowment, so they provide care at no cost to a majority of their patients.
Yeah.
And Scottish Rite is supportive of this project with the Kershaws. This park will be accessible to everyone in Dallas.
Yeah, I'm not focusing specifically on the all abilities field or even Scottish Rite. To me, it's just interesting, you know, as parks are redefined around aquatics, around usability, around activities. I find that to be an interesting aspect of this park.
And Bo mentioned the discussion we had at the park board is accessibility for all people from a disability. And so this is a fully accessible park for all the citizens of Dallas and surrounding communities.
So we talked a little bit before about location. This park, the vast majority of it's in Mr. Medrano's district, but a little bit of it is in mine. And certainly a big portion of the Katy Trail, which is primarily in District 14, is a pipeline into this park. I like the location in terms of a lot of activity and development around it. Is there a negative to the location? I don't see. The location to me is central. It's easy access. We're having outreach to all parts of the city. What's the problem with the location?
Original concern was the concern about having to remove some trees and replace the trees, and that has been addressed. Trent, do you want to touch on that, or Robert?
I'll go ahead. I can cite seven trees in particular that will be removed that are deemed special to almost everybody that sees them, but they're basically to make the park all sports. It's going to have to expand to take those seven trees out. Otherwise, the rest of the park is we're trying to hold it within the existing footprint of the tree line that's there. I don't see that there's another large impact on the rest of the forestation out there.
And I will add is Mesa Design, who has done the two master plans for the entire part of Rivershine Park, they're on board as a consultant, and they're doing all the landscape and tree surveys, and they're going to be maintaining that. That's very important to us. I think in the park board meeting, there's some trees that we're looking at trying to relocate as well. So our goal, we're following the tree replacement mitigation requirements for the city. We're not asking anything special on that as well.
That's it for now. I'll wait for round two. Thank you.
Second round, Councilmember Navarrete.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I love the question my colleague, Mr. Blewett, asked about the children that are being served at Scottish Rite. And the answer was remarkable. The children, 50% of the children being served there come from Pleasant Grove, South Dallas, and West Dallas. So let's only build a park that they can use when they're sick and not when they're home and better. That's what we in West Dallas, we have this all the time where folks come in from another area and come in and start to tell us what we need and how we're going to do it, but then they put us somewhere, they put it somewhere where we can't use it, or they bring a facility in like the Mercy Street ball fields, which are 9 minutes away from this park, and then our own youth are not allowed to utilize it. MoneyGram Park is what I wanted to go to next.
Yes.
MoneyGram Park is a privatized park with some beautiful soccer fields. Is that correct?
Correct.
How many of our youth in the city of Dallas are actually allowed to utilize MoneyGram Park?
Okay. Just quick history, and thank you, Ms. Navarez, for bringing that up, and your council member as well, Mr. Tim Dickey. We have met several times to address those concerns. And I want to thank you, as well as Councilmember Medrano, Tim Dickey, Jess Moreno, and others, because you're right. When that contract was negotiated, it was not a good contract. It did not provide a lot of access for city usage. Thanks to you all making sure that we got that matter addressed, yes, we now do have leagues scheduled. Our recreation leagues, yes, they do now run. They're running a fall league right now, and they'll be running a spring league, and they will be hosting tournaments. But I appreciate you all intervening and making sure that issue was addressed.
Well, I appreciate that. But so, colleagues, what he didn't say is for you all to know is that MoneyGram was something that was approved by the city council, which we basically privatized a park, and then the youth of Dallas weren't allowed to use it. What ended up happening is that FC Dallas has this park, and a stadium was built for FC Dallas. And so the youth that pay $2,500, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 in order to participate in the FC Dallas leagues all come from Frisco, Plano, from Collin County. We literally built a stadium of soccer fields for Collin County. When I went to go tour, there were no flags. And one from Dallas. And it's an amazing field. I have zero issue with the field. The issue is the accessibility to our residents, to the city of Dallas. And that is why I have so much pause on this issue, is because you failed the first time. Now, if we're going to do this, and you just heard, and we talk about equity, and where I know we need parks is in the north side.
Yes.
We have a park desert up north. Why not Crown Park? Crown Park has got some beautiful fields. Well, they're not beautiful. Two existing fields. They're already lit. And they got the parking space. They wouldn't be inside of a neighborhood directly, so it wouldn't impact a neighborhood the way this would. Why not Crown Park?
Okay. I will say we're not going into a lot of details. I have a meeting scheduled next Friday at Crown Park with another group who wants to have some type of joint use agreement with the city as well related to improvements. At Crown Park.
Yes. All right. Well, you know, I still have a lot of pause. We've got to figure this out. I think this deal is way too big. I love all the aspects of it.
Yes.
But the deal is way too big. I feel like we're giving away the park. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Navarez, for pointing out some issues we made in the past or mistakes we made in the past. And so what I'm reading in this proposal is that you're trying to address all that. You've said the park usage today is not going to change. So the people that are using it are going to be able to have access to it. And we've assured that in the contract. Is that correct?
Yes.
The different teams that are playing in the fields now, are their fees going to change?
Yes, their fees will go up.
Okay.
Yes.
What is the position on the three teams? And I noticed now, think it's on page 42, that their fees are all different for each organization currently.
42?
I just lost mine now.
Probably 45.
Well, 42, I guess, no, I'm sorry, where you have the different, where your revenue sources are now. It's earlier in the
program. Okay, I think
it is on page 27, and you list the three different groups that play there now.
Oh, yes, page 14.
Page 14. So on page 14, this North Texas Amateur Baseball League pays, I calculated out, it was... their rate was a little different than.
Yeah, so those.
They all pay different fees per hour if you look at those numbers and you just calculate.
Yes, it's $31 to $60 per hour.
Right. And so those, but they, are they supportive? These three groups, are they supportive of this proposal?
Yes, they are.
Okay. And now we're going to be expanding services to rugby, lacrosse, and soccer.
Yes, that's correct.
Which is a positive. And the city in the past knows that this it's not been taken care of, and we've not prioritized it.
Not
and do we have any plan? You've RFP'd it out twice now. The first time you found that that was not a suitable operator. Is that correct?
Correct.
So we said no. We're not going to make mistakes with not suitable operators, and we RFP'd it out again. And the historical nature of this ballpark. I mean, that's where we played ball in Dallas for a long, long time. So it makes sense to have it there to grow it, if possible. We've got parking. If we go put it somewhere else in Dallas, they're going to have to build a lot more parking, right, because you have a lot more parking agreements with the neighbors. And you also are not on a trail, on one of the busiest trails in town, which has access. Are the stakeholders around there? What I'm hearing is the stakeholders around, including Scottish Rite and other ones, they're all supportive. They're not here telling us they don't want this to happen or they're worried about traffic.
No, they're in support.
Extremely supportive. And we want stakeholder because if we don't have stakeholder engagement and community engagement, this project fails for the city and fails for RPSC. But answering
friends
your question,
of the
correct.
Katy Trail are supportive.
Yes.
Obviously, Scottish Rite is. They're getting a benefit.
Correct. And addressing, we had very good meetings with Friends of Rivershine. As I said, we've had three meetings with them already, continuing to engage. And from my personal opinion, there's been no issues.
There's concerns about the trees. We're trying to mitigate the tree loss. We're losing seven trees. You know, we want facilities like this in other parts of Dallas. I hear that. I'm not saying, but we can't make that happen because we didn't RP that out. And we haven't had someone come forward with a proposal. So, and I love that we're going to have this ballpark, this urban ballpark, which is what I think other cities are doing, and venues. A modern park, as Mr. Blewett said, and it's going to attract more people. We know if we don't have parks that attract people, if we let them decay and get just blank green space, then it just becomes criminal activity. And we don't want that going on here either. So I see this as a win-win. I thank you for mitigating some of the concerns that we've had, but I'm going to be supportive of this. And I think it's ready to go to council.
Council Member Basil Dua.
Thank you, Mayor. I do want to say that I think that this has a lot of potential, and I do believe that we have good partners, which is the best piece to that. But with that said, I think that the partners, when I'm looking at the financials, it just doesn't make sense as far as an investment. I know that Madam President and the Park Board did, you know, make the point that this is a $15 million capital investment into parkland, but knowing you know, who the partners are, I believe that we know that their investment is looking at a return like anybody would want on an investment. And it doesn't show much of one. So I would like to see us get more of that share. I think 25,000 versus 3% or whatever is higher is not a very good deal. I think that we could also look at structuring some sort of ticket fee so that we can address some of the inequities that have been brought up here by the council, and those profit shares or fees come back to other park facilities for improvements around. That's one of the points that I'd like to make. The I also wanted to commend Councilwoman Mendelson for talking about not having kind of both sides. And so I would like, we have Jesse Moreno here, who was on the park board and was one of the two votes who was in opposition. And I'd love to see, would you like to come up and speak?
Thank you. My name's Jesse Moreno. I represent District 2 on the park board. River Shawn resides in District 2. There's no doubt River Shawn needs some work. When staff came to us and said, hey, we need a new pavilion, a playground over the canopy, Councilmember Medrano and I stepped up and we allocated bond dollars for that. When the need is there, we will step up for it. I'm very disappointed in the process in the two RFPs that were presented. They're very different in nature. The community was presented at the first RFP. They were promised the same footprint, no tree impact. They were promised a smaller stadium with less seating capacity. It was a collegiate stadium, not a minor league stadium. Why are we getting in the business of minor league stadiums? First, it's River Shawn. Tomorrow, it's Randall. Whose community park is next? Our parks are not for private interests. Our parks are for the citizens of Dallas. There is work to be done at River Shawn, but we can do it. And I am just not happy with the process. The fee structure that's being proposed is far from being where it needs to be. This stadium is going to be locked. You're going to have to pay to participate, to have a league play, or our kids who want to go to a baseball game, want to go to a concert, they're going to be paying $50 for a concert ticket. They're going to be paying to get drinks, popcorn. This is an inequitable proposal. Fair Park. Let's bring Fair Park into this. They have the parking. The first baseball field stadium in Dallas was at Fair Park. We keep talking about bringing Fair Park to life, making sure that there's something going on every day. River Shawn is used heavily already. Mayor Pro Tem Medrano and I receive emails, phone calls from noise complaints, traffic complaints. Those are all going to increase. We don't need more events at River Shawn. River Shawn already is saturated with events every weekend. It's going to become trampled. The nature that's there is going to be gone. And I'm very concerned that we're setting a precedent to start privatizing our parks. Again, whose park is next?
Thank you. Thank you. I have 1 minute.
Go ahead.
I also just want to piggyback. Again, I see some positives. I don't think that this is necessarily the most ideal location within our park series because of a lot that was brought up. I do think that we have better locations. I think that I heard Councilwoman Gates speak about wanting to, you know, make sure that our parks are utilized. I don't know how often you go, but River Shawn is extremely utilized. My daughter's birthday party has been there for the past 3 years. It's one of the only covered parks, playgrounds. I bring her there on a nice, big, sunny day without the fear of her getting sunburnt. The basketball courts are utilized for pickup games almost daily, every single day. The residual traffic coming off of Katy Trail just to utilize the green space there. I think that it is incredible how much River Shawn is used. And if you add 25,000 people and a huge amount of traffic of transits coming to and from events, and that's 136 days of a year, and we have 104 Saturdays and Sundays in a year. So you're essentially taking the park away from the community every weekend of the year. You're essentially taking it away almost any time that it would be utilized. And when there is big events there, even if you're saying that the other space that the community is not going to be impacted on, they will be impacted because 25,000 or 2,500 people are going to be saturating their home, their space, their community park. So I don't think that this has been thought through in how this is going to impact or benefit. And I think the biggest key word that we have to be looking at is benefit the community. That's the partnership that we need to be looking at whenever we look at these private partnerships.
Councilmember Navarez.
Third round. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The next thing I wanted to talk about was, did y'all do an environmental impact study on this project?
No, we have not.
So no environmental impact study. So 2,500 more people, that means way more cars. I think I added up 12, 13, 1,400 parking spaces in the agreement. That means more traffic. What the impact? We already heard that we're going to cut down 7 trees. We already have a devastating issue that happened in the city where we lost thousands of trees. So now we're going to cut down trees inside of parks. What is the impact, the environmental impact? And I would call on that an environmental impact be done, impact study be done before you even bring this back to council. The wildlife that's there in the park. And then on top of that, the noise levels, how is that going to affect the surrounding neighborhood, the people that are inside of the park? How will the environmental impact affect the hospital, the Scottish Rite Hospital? So these are the things that's why I don't think this has been completely well thought through. But I would call on the park board I'm requesting that environmental impact study be done on this entire project before we even bring this to the council. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Blackman.
So my question is, if this deal doesn't happen, what happens to the park in all of this that needs to be taken care of?
First of all, there would definitely be no improvements as it relates to capital improvements to the ball field. We would have to wait on the next bond program, which could be anywhere 4 to 5 years. I'm talking about from the time that's actually approved. The other impact, I do believe, and I heard the council members' concerns, and that's why I have been tirelessly working ever since this was approved by the board to make sure we mitigate those concerns by the council and the board. And in particular, we have really been focused on how do we balance the usage, okay, between the private use and the public use. And that is very important to us. Mm-hmm. And I assure you, once again, as far as any big events, they still have to go through our normal process where I have to, as the director, I have to approve it. Our special events division have to approve it. So far as traffic concerns and parking, that will be we will reevaluate that after each event and see how that's working, because I agree 100%. We must minimize the impact to our current users and make sure they have the opportunity to continue to utilize this park. That is first and foremost that we will make sure we assure. And so you ask the question, what will happen if we don't go through with the deal? I do think we do need to increase the usage for us, the public use, for us, the baseball field. Okay? And if we don't make those improvements, I don't see that happening in the immediate future right now. I do not, as my professional experience. So it is a benefit if we get the turf fields. It is. Because now, as I mentioned earlier in my presentation earlier, it gives us the opportunity to get more public use out there on turf fields. And we don't have one in our current system. And the council and other council members brought up the concern about other locations. I assure you, just like I mentioned, I'm actively looking at other locations right now. My number one priority is to continue these type of partnerships, but we have to always put at the forefront, we can't infringe on the public. We got to make sure it's still a public park. It meets the number one criteria. Does it still have public access? And so I want to assure each one of you all, any deal I bring forward, we're going to do our due diligence, and we're going to make sure that we put the public first and the will of the council and the board.
So when they mention, it's been mentioned that it's not, it possibly couldn't be public, I guess, but when the baseball game is happening, that is a ticketed, but the other 89% is still accessible by public.
Yes. As I mentioned earlier, yeah, their potential usage is anywhere from the first year, 118 days, up to about 136 days. You know, my biggest concern was, okay, well, there's like 260 opportunity days there. So can we come to an agreement with the current usage plus our rec leagues where we're getting almost half that usage, because it was pointed out earlier, I agree 100%. There was deals made in the past that wasn't in the best interest of the public. And so we have learned from our mistakes. And so, yes, any deal that comes forward before this council, I assure you, that's going to be at the forefront.
So the ones that are listed here, they will be honored.
Yes.
I mean, especially the ones we have an ILA with, DISC, and then our own RECs. And then the other ones, they will be incorporated into a schedule of events.
Yes.
And there's already usually about 104 that happens.
Yes.
Okay. And, sir, I'm sorry, the one at the front, we didn't get your name and who you represent.
I'm Robert McFarland, one of the partners of RPSE.
Okay.
And live here in Dallas, and this is my home.
So. Okay. Sorry. That's it. Thank you.
Councilmember Atkins.
Third round? Second?
Second. Round. My colleagues mentioned something about environmental. Do we have any environmental issues there at that location?
We have an urban biologist on board, and he has not expressed any environmental concerns. But we would definitely take it up under consideration.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Councilmember Blewett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Moreno brought up some points that were kind of interesting to me. The idea of, you know, public-private, or, you know, the usage of the baseball field in particular, I don't see for a minor league team a huge difference between that and a lot of the rec leagues and youth leagues and things that we do. In my own park, in my own neighborhood, we have kickball leagues that register and schedule events pretty often. So that didn't resonate as much with me as the concept of an open park. I mean, because the parks that do register or schedule these leagues, they are pretty open when they're not scheduled. So that's an issue for me on this, to be sure that we're aware of. Can you talk more about the access to these facilities when they're not scheduled?
Thank you, council member. Currently, the park is not, the ball field is not accessible today. It's locked today. And you have to go through a scheduling mechanism through the Parks Department. So we will have a more utilized park with more improvements, and it will be accessible. There is we're working with the staff to schedule a certain number of days per year that is no charge and open play. But currently there will have to be some regulation of who actually gets on the fields at certain times. But they'll go through a scheduling program, and we'll work through the Parks Department on that.
Well, I'll just kind of put a bow on it by saying that access to as many people as possible, as many days as possible, is this is a public park.
Yes.
So just as long as we're well aware and working on that.
And, again, I want to clarify as well is the RP asked for 3,500 seats. Mm-hmm. We responded with 3,500 seats.
Right.
So we are not increasing the seat count. We're responding directly to the RFP.
Okay, good deal. Thank you.
All right. Is no further discussion. My turn.
This will be fun.
So first off, I just want to start off by, I think, President Collins and Councilmember Gates. Rivershawn's a safe park. We don't need you to try to scare us into supporting this. And you mentioned the homeless. You mentioned crime. It's a safe park, so stop that. There's police and cops all over that park. We have the Katy Trail, so you can imagine it, so just stop that. Councilmember Kleinman, I know we're talking about the council members and priorities with the bond programs. We all have a bunch of priorities in our district. I wish I could have got a rec center. I wish I could have got the baseball field done. You know, those are the kind of things that we want to do, but I have to spread it out throughout the district. I think all of us know that. So I think those are unfair comments when you're talking about me representing my district. Maybe you can get that mall done before your 8 years are done. Let's see. I think this is great. I think it's a great project, but I think there are some issues. I was involved in the first RFP, and in this one I had nothing to do with it. We had community meetings after community meetings after community meetings with people's input on the first one. That's one of the reasons it also wasn't going to be on the bond program, because we thought it was going to be able to be taken care of that way. So
when it came, it was a surprise to me when this all of a sudden popped up and there was a group and here we go, we're going to start working on a ball field that I knew nothing about and a lot of community members knew nothing about. After the noise complaints we get, after the traffic complaints we get, so on and so on. That was news to me. I think we need to put a break. So I'm not saying that we're not going to do this. I think we need to go to the community. We need to have those meetings that we had before. We haven't had those. But I also think there's a lot of different deal points that we need to make and we need to improve on. I've been working with John Jenkins and T.C. Broadnecks behind the scenes. You guys might not be aware of that, but I have. Lately, in the last couple of weeks, we've been working on trying to make this deal a better deal. Money Gram Park, we make zero revenue off of Money Gram Park. You know how much FC Dallas makes off of that park with all those kids playing and practicing there? We make zero. They maintain the fields. Okay, we'll give them that. We make nothing off of that. I'm not going to give away Rivershawn Park. I'm sorry. I grew up playing ball here. I grew up running the trail. I did all that. This is my park in District 2. I live right down the street, and I'm not going to give it away. And I think we've been talking about that. I would like to see it shrunken down a bit. I don't want to knock any trees down. I don't know if we can do that. I think that's something that we talked about. I would like to see a dollar surcharge on every ticket sold for your concerts, your sports events. And remember, this is a premier sport marketing company. They're going to be successful. They're not going to fold. They're going to be here for a long time. They're going to be for a long time. I'd like to have a percentage of the advertisements they do. I'd like the percentage of the naming rights. This is the way that we're going to get our rec center redone. This is the way we're going to be able to pay for our trails, pay for our canopy that we couldn't pay, that we had to use bond money for because we couldn't pay $150,000. So, yes, we did. And I said, of course, I'm going to put bond money in to get your canopy for the playground fixed. So those are what the count they asked me to do, and I did it. Rivershawn's very taken care of, very, very, very taken care of. When you talk about Scottish Rite is a hospital. They have their own all-accessible playground now. They do. They have one. Those are points that they're okay, but, I mean, they have their own already. So I think we just need to slow down a little bit, work on these deal points. Those are what I want. We're not going to give this park away. That's my whole thing. And I think I've talked to you. I talked to TC about that and go from there. So there's some work that needs to be done. I am full support of trying to get something like this done. Like I said, I was very involved in the first one, not involved in this one at all. So hope moving forward, I do not believe that we need to be taking it to council in December. I think we can hold it off for a month or two and work through the deals. And I hope you would support me on that in my district. But I think that overall, I think at the end of the day, we'll be able to get this part done. Thank you.
Well, I have one question.
Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you. Just one quick question, just for clarification. On the annual cost of the athletic field maintenance and the overall maintenance for the entire park, is that to be taken care of by the city? Is that what we have right now?
That's what we provide now.
Right now.
Yes.
And that's, are you adding the 96 and the 7?
No, they would be responsible for.
No. What I'm trying to get to, what is the total amount for maintaining the park now?
A little over $100,000.
That's what I want to get to. Yes. That's what I've got. So that's what I wanted to make sure of. So moving forward, if you have this field, would the city of Dallas take care of the maintenance of that piece too? With the field?
No, they'll be responsible for all of the maintenance. Okay, also be providing some additional dollars for some enhanced maintenance of the general park.
And that is that written now in the
Yes.
It's written in there now to what you just said.
Yes.
All right. I just needed to get a grip on that. And just a minor comment in terms of usage of facilities that we pay for. I'm very, very concerned about that and make sure that we protect that. I've witnessed even with the, even though it's not a park situation, but at that golf course that we created with all that money and then the people in the neighborhood can't even use it. It was just an insult. So hopefully this will, we'll be able to work through that. But I did want to make those two comments. You all know the Byron Nelson is all we put laid up in the and the people in the neighborhood can't even go in the neighborhood. And then you're talking about tax dollars, and we can't even use the neighborhood. We can't even use the facility. But once a year when we go in to see what AT&T has sponsored. So, but anyway, I'll support the council member, but I'm excited about that, this possibility, and would also just, I'm one of those who are going to keep working because, you know, I would love to have this facility. Of course, we all say that in our communities, but I think it's an opportunity that worth looking at. So, Mayor, as we proceed now, what would be the next step as we prepare and not prepare for the December 11th?
I continue to keep on working with park staff and the group to make sure this deal is a fair deal for the city and for the residents of Dallas.
I guess my question is, do we need to make a motion or something?
I don't know, TC. How do you want to do this?
So there could be no action today, I think, if council's thoughts are to the mayor's comments about not placing this item on the December 11th meeting for council consideration. I'll discuss that with Mr. Jenkins, and we'll continue to work collaboratively to figure out how we get to a deal that meets council's satisfaction, particularly the District 2 council member as the representative for the area.
Thank you. Councilmember Kleinman.
Yeah, I don't think you have consensus from this body to pull it from the agenda.
So,
Councilmember Narvaez.
There may not be a consensus, but I think that out of respect, we would do that for any other council member in their own district, to allow them time to work out a deal that they felt was strong enough inside of their neighborhood. We would give them the opportunity to try to work out that deal without saying, oh, stick it on the agenda without that. So, you know, everybody knows that this is a gem park, and I would have to say that we give Mayor Medrano a chance to work out the deal and make this the strongest, best possible deal, not just for Rivershawn, but for the residents of the city of Dallas. That's all it is a little bit of time. And if we're not willing to do that, then this council is just ready to give it away. So I disagree. I think we give Mr. Medrano, he's asking for just a couple months, and if they can't get the deal done in a couple months, and if you got to push it, I mean, obviously there's a reason that you're shaking your head, and if you've got to push this deal that fast, then that gives me even more pause when there are some changes that could possibly be made on this deal. And I would say that we support Mr. Medrano on what his simple request. Thank you,
and
Mr. Mayor.
I'm not saying that I can't get it done. We just need to sit down and talk and see what happens. And when it comes to that day, if we get it done, we're done. If not, we just delay it a few weeks or a month. But I think we can get it done. That's how I feel.
Council Member Blewett.
I think that Mr. Medrano has brought up enough points that I would delay it a little bit, but I don't like the idea of an open-ended delay. I do think there's a time concern here. How you just phrased your last comments about a couple of weeks, I know our calendar is what it is. I would like to give you the opportunity to try and tighten up a couple of financial aspects to it, which I do think there might be some movement. But I do think time is of the essence. I don't know a lot about their timeline, but I don't think we can just leave it open-ended and think that we're going to come back in January, February, and March and that we're going to have the ability to put together their deal points. I don't know how to structure that. How do we say, okay, a little bit of time, not a lot? Can you speak to that?
I actually want to try to get it done before December, so we can vote on it December 11th. But I'm thinking
I would like,
you know, maybe the first meeting in January, but I think that I can work it out to where we vote.
It does sound like city manager and the mayor and you, and if that's your intention,
been working on it, yeah.
No, I understand. I'm just saying if that's the intention, then there's no action today anyway, then we don't have to do anything today other than wait to hear back from you in the next week or two and then make a decision if it stays or goes for December 11th. Is that right? So we'll know in the next week or two if it's going to get pulled or not. We have a little bit of time.
One, we'll need to publish the agenda prior to that, if in fact the council member or the mayor pro tem can work through the issues between the Parks Department and himself, the item can stay on at the meeting itself. If we've not gotten to any good progress, we can actually defer the item at that time.
But as of now, our drop dead day would be December 3rd or 4th, right?
No,
December 11th?
Friday, technically, for it to actually show up in a draft agenda.
So
we could defer it on the agenda.
So what's the date of that then?
So it would go out December 6th, but we would publish a draft agenda where there'd have to be some formal action to take it off at the meeting. So.
Member Gates.
I have a question for the city attorney. This is an open procurement, right? I mean, how much can, do we have to be having these discussions with the vendors and public? So, I mean, is it needs to be briefed again, or what can we all? I mean, how can we work on this, or do we just work directly with staff?
Works. This was just a briefing today to kind of give you an outline of it, but that's the procedure. Is just that.
So if we have issues with the current the terms, then we can take that to staff, and the staff has to take that to with the vendor.
Well, you don't. Council members don't negotiate. This
right.
At the,
so
you
I
know,
don't
at
understand
this,
what can happen between now and then if we can't make things.
I mean, you have input. You know, today you all have discussed it, and then staff will. You know, staff. With the proposal, we'll discuss it. But at this point in time, you know, the council doesn't negotiate the contract.
Right. So we're directing. I mean, for what we've heard today, staff. Yeah.
Right,
so I don't. Yeah. And then regard to public meetings. I mean, I've heard that concern that there hasn't been public meetings. But can that happen or not, though, during the – what's the difference? I mean, I'm confused on how – because if we attend public meetings during a procurement, I don't think we can do that.
Well, the park board – you had a public meeting at the park board,
right?
You have a public meeting here today. Now, there's not public input, but it's obviously a public meeting. But staff, you know, staff is to determine kind of some of those issues. And then when you get it to the council, when the contract is before you, then at that point in time, if you wanted to get input, you could. And then at that point in time, then you would vote on the contract if you approved of the contract.
Well, I mean, this is obviously it's a city manager decision, and on when it's going to be put on. Now we could put it on, and someone could delay it and ask for something. But that's, you know, we've got to be conscious of the procurement process. We can't be negotiating this deal, guys. I mean, I know it's in Mr. Bajano's district, but he can't go negotiate it on his own, and we can't.
I told you I've been working with staff already. You just got to pay attention.
I've been talking to staff.
I haven't been talking to them.
I just asked if we could go direct staff and they could talk to them.
That's what I said I was
and
doing.
I was told by
I've been doing
that.
The staff can do it. I haven't talked to them at all. Just so you know, I have not spoken to them at all. Councilmember West.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I definitely want to support the council member whose district this is in and his request for community meeting and delay here. I do want to understand what that means for the situation. If this is, let's say, pushed to the first council meeting in January for a decision to be made, does that impact anything in your world, the negotiations with any of the teams or anything like that, or is it really not a big deal at all if we delay it?
Thank you, Councilman. There is a timing issue. We're trying to play ball May of 2021 with the league that we're in. We're in a 12-team league, and the owners' meetings was here about 2 months ago. There is a time component, but I also want to address that this is not approval to start construction. We have to go through full design and meet with the city down at Jefferson Street, go through all the permitting process, complete a traffic study, complete the proper protocols from ADA access. We have to go through fire safety. So there is checks and balances over the next 10 to 12 months from a design perspective and city input and city and community meetings. So this is, if it goes through and passes on December 11th, that is really the start of the marathon. And we have about 12 months, 10 to 12 months of design, meetings with the city, approvals through the park department, approvals through public works, traffic. I mean, there's a lot of hurdles to get through. So, again, this is the approval to start the marathon, and our goal is to try to get under employee involved by May of 2021. So I'm trying to get the project started. So there is a concern on delaying it, and I appreciate Councilman Blewett. We will work and committed to work with Mayor Medrano, and we're committed to work with staff. We have been demonstrating that. So I want to be very clear to the council that we are willing, and so we only could address issues objectively, not subjectively. So every time an objective issue has come up, we've addressed, and I felt like we've addressed those issues. So we will work with, our goal is to be in December, but if it has to move, we will work with the city. Again, we want to work for both parties.
So it's not going to kill the deal, any kind of deals, if it gets pushed to January. It's going to make it a
little
bit
harder. It's already been delayed per the RFP by a month or two. So it's already been delayed and pushed off. Again, it's going to be, we are hoping to be under full design and stuff by now. But if it moves into early part of January, probably not. But we are really getting to a point of a critical path with 14 months of construction timeline in order to get open and try to get under construction. We're pushing that time frame.
Well, and I get that, and I understand. You know, having gone through OCMOC over in Jefferson myself on projects, I know how complicated that can be and tenuous. So I appreciate, you know, that you understand the process too and want to get through that as quickly as possible. But I also want to make sure, you know, we do have the time we need to get this deal negotiated if it can be brought together. And I feel like Mayor Pro Tem is – he's giving me confidence that he's going to be able to pull something off here in the next few weeks. So working with staff.
And we're committed as well. Thank you.
I appreciate that.
Councilmember Mendelson and then Kleiman.
So I actually have the same timing question that my colleague, Councilmember West, asked. My second item would just be that if you're taking input from council as a staff, I would say that having some sort of return from ticket prices that goes back to Rivershawn, not just for the park, but for the rec center, dedicating it directly back to the community that's being impacted by this project would make sense to me and be something I would like to see.
Councilmember Kleiman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and I appreciate your commitment to try to get this done in time for December, and want to certainly have the patience to let you get that done. Thank you.
Thank you. I guess that's, there's no other discussion. Do we have any? Oh, we do have closed session. Yeah, we'll do it now. Mm-hmm. So it is 11:24, November 19, 2019. The City Council briefing will now go into closed session under Section 551.076 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to discuss deliberations regarding the deployment of or specific occasions for implementing security personnel or devices, and under Section 55.017 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the city attorney on the following matter, legal issues related to Diamond Ross. The executive session will take place in the Council Briefing Room 6ES. And the City Council chambers. So we have to clear the room. Clear the room. The council briefing meeting has completed its closed session under Section 551076 and under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, and at 12:11 on November 19, 2019, we have returned to open session. It is 12:11, and we are adjourned.